Hey everyone, welcome back to Ship It. I'm Matt Merrill from Dept. Today we're talking about architecture sprints, and I'll describe a little bit more about what those are later if you haven't heard about those. But today we have a special guest. It's actually one of our clients who went through an architecture sprint with us at Dept, and I'm gonna let him introduce himself.
Hey Matt, excited to be here. Evan Da Silva, I'm the Senior Vice President of Payments at Bloomerang. Bloomerang is a donor relationship management platform for nonprofit organizations. So we have online fundraising, it's customer relationship management, and volunteer management as well. So we're really focused on three key things. There's donor retention, there's donor acquisition, and there's online fundraising. It's a really simple and intuitive product. What we really focus on is our customers. They don't have a lot of time. A lot of the time we have folks who are part-time or they're wearing 10 different hats. So it's a product that's really simple, that does a lot of things really easily to help our customers maximize the impact that they have on their mission.
I like that we're using this example for an architecture sprint because it really does have a really good mission. We'll talk a little bit about why you brought us in a moment, but I just really quick kind of wanted to describe what we consider an architecture sprint, because I don't think it's really a common term in the industry. So the closest thing that I've heard to an architecture sprint before is referred to as a sprint zero. Basically doing some pre-work before you start a major project to kind of basically figure out what you don't know and try to guess at the unknown unknown, so to speak. And we come in and work very much with you. And it's a lot of interviewing. It's a lot of diving into architectures and code to basically make unknowns unknown. So it's really kind of setting up a project for success moving forward so that you can get building right after that starts. And it can also be done for existing architectures or existing products where you may be having a particular challenge, whether it's a performance issue or a scalability issue or something like that. And in the case of Bloomerang, that's actually where we're at. And let's kind of get into why Bloomerang engaged us.
So I'm going to go back to what I started at Bloomerang. I've been here for about 2 years, and they brought me on right after we launched payments processing on the Bloomerang platform. We'd made an acquisition, Kindful, that had a small payments processing business. We'd launched that into the Bloomerang platform. A sense of scale, Bloomerang was about 5 to 6 times larger than Kindful was. So all of a sudden, we're introducing payments to 6x the number of customers that previously had it. No surprise, it takes off. It was a really great investment thesis, a product thesis around creating value for our customers. And I come on board maybe 3 months after we launched the platform. Now fast forward to about a year later, and we've got 3 to 4x the number, great growth, phenomenal growth, 3 to 4x the number of customers who are processing payments on the Bloomerang platform who were previously. Great problem to have.
Yes.
And it's an interesting problem for me too, because my prior gig, I'd been running a payments platform in the property management space, which is rent collection. Super consistent, right? It is every, the first of the month, the 15th of the month, rent is coming in. The same throughout the year. You have your spikes at the beginning of the month, but it's really easy from an architectural standpoint, from a scalability standpoint, to be able to predict the volume that you're going to have on the platform. So as I'm coming into Bloomerang, I learned very quickly, this isn't the case. We have two types of spikes that we deal with. So the first one is probably something that you would expect, which is, and this is really the big one, is seasonality. Most giving is done from Thanksgiving to the end of the year. There's a lot of people around the holiday season. Giving Tuesday is an event that's the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, as well as a lot of folks trying to get their tax write-offs in at the end of the year. The last week or two of the year, you see a lot of donation volume. So typically fundraising platforms, giving platforms, see about 30 to 40% of their volume in the last 40 days of the year. So we've got a big spike at the end of the year. In addition to that, there's random spikes throughout the year that are tied to specific events. A great example is we had a customer that was processing maybe $100,000 a month, and they do a lot of supporting refugee missions, and the Ukraine war breaks out, and all of a sudden they go from processing $100,000 a month to $10 million a month. big change. We also had a video game developer that, you know, any given month, maybe they process a couple $1,000s and, you know, a few thousand transactions. But then they, in July, they would do a special fundraising event in their application where if you bought something in app, I think it was like a combat game, so you bought like a shield in app, that would go get donated to their fundraising arm, to their fundraising cause, and they'd spike to tens of thousands of donations in a 2 or 3 day window. So we have this, you know, as we're getting to scale now too, we've 3 or 4x the number of customers on the platform. We have more customers who are randomly spiking around different events, and then we're also scaling around the giving season. So it's a year later, we've gotten all this scale, and one of our competitors in the space, one of the really tough events for them was their platform crashed during the given season.
Okay.
So if you crash on Giving Tuesday, which is one of the biggest days of the year, your customers, they don't get that revenue back. People are giving on Giving Tuesday. They go and they donate on another platform. And for me, I'm thinking about my business. Wow, the most important thing for me as I'm scaling is I need to be up and running 100% of the time for November and December. I can't afford downtime. So we brought in Dept, and I love the way you described it, to know the unknowns. It wasn't even as if we had, you know, necessarily a, everything was processing, everything was working fine at the time, but we'd never been at the scale, so we didn't know how we were going to respond to it. And the way we had been set up, we've grown since and built out our architectural practice, but our CTO was the primary architect of our system. He had left. We didn't have the new CTO here. The new CTO is starting in November, in the middle of the giving season. So from a business, we said, okay, this is a potential risk. How do we mitigate this? And that's when we reached out to the folks at Dept. Let's understand the current systems that we have, how they're tied together now. Let's think about what we can do in the near term to harden our system, to understand the potential risks for it, how we can mitigate those risks. And then I've got a CTO who's starting in the middle of this, right, November, December, the most important time of the year for us. How can we get him off and running right out of the gate, right? How do we have a playbook for him so he can just jump right in, understand the system architecture, understand his risks, and start managing the team around the giving season right away?
Okay, cool. So, and just to be 100% clear, you guys have actually probably two existing engineering teams, or maybe at this point you've combined them, right?
Yeah, so there was a engineering team for the Kindful platform. There's an engineering team from the Bloomring platform. And, you know, we use agile development, so we're broken out into scrum teams. We've got a couple scrum teams on each platform.
Gotcha. And I'll say peripherally involved in this architecture sprint. And I think I remember that those teams were on two different tech stacks as well.
Yes, they're on two different tech stacks.
Yeah, right. Which, that's not a judgment. Like, yeah. I mean, come on, you're merging companies. That's not a judgment at all. But it makes it tough.
So right? I'm sitting here smiling a little bit as you say that, because yeah, it does. It makes it challenging to be on two different tech stacks. And you have, they're very different. I'm smiling because there's also different tech stacks, and I feel like we made different code decisions, or each business had made different decisions about which code or which tech they wanted to use on each platform. They were completely different. Right. So it wasn't like we had redundancy, whereas if we want to harden the Bloomring platform, we can bring folks over from the Kindful platform. It's two sets of engineers who are working on their separate platforms.
Right. We've got two teams. There's not necessarily an architectural practice that's shared between the two of them. You're in between CTOs. And I always like to, I'm just gonna keep going. One of the things that I always like to say is, like, we work with you, we're not ivory tower people, right? Like, we pride ourselves on getting in there, trying to make pragmatic recommendations that will be sticky. And also, like, we're not, when everyone wins, or excuse me, When more people win, everyone's going to win, right? Like, so we're not interested in ruffling any feathers or doing anything like that. So our whole idea when we went into this was to really try to bridge the gap and work with people. And one of the things that we do first is we just shut up and listen.
Yeah, I'll second that. And from my seat, it was one of the things that I was most nervous about,
right, we don't have an interim CTO, there's a gap. I'm coming in to help solve a problem. And for background on me, I know a lot about payments, but from a technical standpoint, like I can write a little bit of SQL, enough to be dangerous, but I'm in no way qualified to be in the conversations with my engineers. I need this broken down for me to understand what the platform's like and put into layman's terms. Right. So there's a, like I said, a leadership gap in the organization right now, shortly to be filled, but now we're bringing in an outside consultant, and that can be scary for the team.
Of course.
Right? There's a team who just lost their leader, and now they have a group of folks who they haven't met before who are coming in to assess the platform that they've been building.
Right.
So there's a real EQ, component to it. There's a real emotional intelligence that's tied to it of how do we come in as an outside party and make these people feel comfortable that we're not here to check their homework. We're here to support them and make them better moving forward. And it was evident right from the start. I will absolutely second that there was a lot of listening just from the get-go, asking questions, trying to tease apart how our system, how our platform was tied together, how it was architected. But right from the beginning, I felt like that the team's approach really broke down the barriers with our engineering team, so they didn't feel defensive, right? Like that's what I'm getting at, is there's a real opportunity for my teams to become defensive and protect themselves, and there ended up being none of that. I ended up being a really fantastic partnership and pretty good vibes, I think, between the Dept and the Bloomerang teams.
And I mean, let's... Hopefully you're comfortable with me saying this, but like there was absolutely defensiveness at first, because, and I don't blame them. I've been in that situation where you get a consultant and you're like, who are these people? What are they going to tell us? But I think that what I saw is pretty quickly after the first couple of meetings with your engineers, there's one in particular I'm thinking about where I really like the guy, I'm forgetting his name, but like you could almost see him relax when we were just like, tell us what's going on. I can't even remember the details of the bug, but there was this bug that was happening. It was some kind of performance bug. And we just hopped right in there with him. Tell us what you know. Like I think he was relieved to hear that we weren't trying to suggest things that were already done and I think we even started with that of like, what have you already done? Right, like we're not going to try to suggest things that you haven't already done, but that you have already done.
I think there's some relief around the fact of, okay, we are going into giving season. We have a new leader coming in, and it's really great to have somebody to bounce ideas off of, somebody to verify the thinking that we already have, to give us some new ideas that we haven't already thought of. And I think it ended up being it transitioned very quickly from maybe a little bit of defensiveness to some relief. Okay, we're going to get better from this. Our biggest fear is that something we don't know about puts our platform down that we haven't spent time to think about, been able to think about. And the ability for Dept to help us see around some of those corners, it actually, I think there was a realization of, oh, my life just got a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, can you think of a bigger nightmare than you're an engineer and your platform goes down on Christmas Eve. You got to be online to stand the platform back up. Nobody wants to give up their Christmas Eve with their family or whatever holiday, Thanksgiving, whatever holiday it might be. It's not only the most important time of year for us, but from a personal standpoint for our employees, we want to make sure that they get to take that time with their family. So we don't want any incidents internally to make sure that everyone has good mental health through the holidays. Challenging enough time of year anyway. So I think they went into that mode really, really quickly. It was like, okay, no, this is really actually great for us. And I think a great data point on this is just, we kept you guys around afterwards too. It was like, oh no, we like working with this team. This is good. There's some other opportunities for Dept to help us out and to partner with us in other areas of our application.
Yeah. I think one of the, I saw this working with Bloomerang, and I've seen it before too, where once you get in there, let me step back and say, we always staff these architecture sprints with probably our most experienced and best, right? And they're all engineers that are in there getting their hands dirty in code. These aren't architects who aren't actually coding. And I think that in the case of Bloomerang and the payment system that we were working on with you guys, once we started, you know, just hopping in there and making solid suggestions, you could almost see the engineers being like, oh, okay. And then there's this point where the depth team, usually we hear something that an engineer is saying, and that engineer has been saying that till they've been blue in the face. And for whatever reason, they're not getting any traction. And when we come in and hear that from a third party perspective, we're like, yeah, that person's absolutely right. That's what you need to do. That's when you see the relief, the relief on an engineer's face of like, thank God, somebody's listening to me. Somebody's agreeing with me. It's really nice to see.
Yeah, well, I think too, from my seat, you know, payments business leader coming in, trying to understand, you know, make sure that the platform is ready for the giving season, to have somebody, yeah, I talked to my engineers and understood what they were saying, but it's like, okay, I want to validate everything that we know, and the CTO is not here, so I need another level of, you know, of redundancy here. I think they felt empowered and their voice ended up being amplified, because there were certainly ways to improve the architecture. But to your point, I think there were plenty of moments where it was like, oh no, you know, what Cody's been saying is right, and here's why it's right. And they just felt that in a lot of instances too, is just reinforcing what they knew to be true already, and then helping the rest of the business understand and trust what we already knew.
Exactly. And if I so kind of just going a little bit more technical for a second, I remember in the Bloomerang case that you had these two systems. One was Rails and one was .NET, I believe, yep. Right? And basically, there were these disparate parts, and we were working with you guys to basically try to figure out how we can kind of that's not a good way to put it, but reuse existing components and put them into an architecture that would work. And one of the challenges with two different tech stacks like that is being able to use the existing skill sets that you have. Nobody wants to have to reskill a team, or worse yet, fire a team that doesn't have the skill set. So we were really looking at it in terms of like, what can be, what is the best of both of these things? So
yeah, we need to be able to, I think we talked about this at the beginning, where it's like, okay, we've got two teams and there isn't a lot of, we can't move one team from working on one platform to the other platform. So how do we make best use of everyone's skill set across both platforms? How do we tie the two of them together? And we have, there's components of the two platforms that are integrated into each other as well. So we're on the post-acquisition journey to getting to a single platform. And there was some real thinking around architecture that needed to be done there as well with the resources that we've had. We've done a pretty good job with that, but this certainly helped us with the foundation of fitting those two pieces together in a more meaningful way.
If we had more time, what would we have done differently?
I don't have much. I got exactly what I needed out of the engagement with Dept. I know we're on a podcast. I'm on a podcast with Dept talking to you about it, right? It's like, but that's really genuine. Is I came in, I needed another set of eyes on my platform. Again, I know I've used this a couple times. I needed somebody to help us see around some corners, and I needed somebody to advocate, empower the team, and then get my CTO off on the right track now too. Get Tommy started off and going in the right direction. And there's also some urgency to it. Also, I didn't call you guys in July, right? The change in personnel was like, oh, this is, I think it was, you know, September, October. And we said, hey, we need you in here. We need you in here quickly. So it was surge resources too, that we needed on a critical component of our business. And Dept really fulfilled all of our requirements and did it. I think the EQ component that I talked about, which was the piece that I was most concerned about, right? I would have think that I'd be sitting here telling you, yeah, it was great to work with Dept, but there was a little bit of conflict between the teams, and it was really genuinely very harmonious. I was mostly in the room to make sure that the two teams got together. So I started out joining the first few calls, being like making sure that, okay, everyone's going to play nice here. And I think, you know, halfway through the third call, I was like, I don't understand half of what they're talking about. I don't need to be here. I just need to make sure that everyone played nice. And we've seen all that. So everyone played nice. You came in the timing that we needed to have someone come in. You know, you had the output that I needed for my CTO and gave us some good suggestions to improve the system in the near term to make sure we were in a good spot. So it checked all the boxes, right? Like, I know that sounds a little cheesy, but like that's the reality of it, is that You did everything that I asked, and you did it in the timeline that I asked. It was a really valuable project for us. Awesome. I slept a lot better the entire giving season. Haven't had you guys in.
I was going to make the joke earlier. I was like, my entire goal as an engineer is to never get called on call. Like, you know, like if that's the, that's success right there is never get called. So yeah, I can relate to that. Sounds good. So you heard it first. We couldn't have done anything better. No, that's not true. That is not true at all. But thank you so much for coming in. It was really nice working. It was really nice working with you on this. You have a great team. And thank you so much for coming in to talk about it. I think to me, the most valuable part of this is when other businesses are considering something like this, being able to be like, yeah, this is kind of a no pressure way of being like, this is somebody's real experience. Like they're not here to sell it. There's not too much in it for you. You're here kind of out of the kindness of your heart. So really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to pay it forward and the great work that you guys did for us. And what I would say too is this is a pretty, you know, relatively speaking, it's a lightweight engagement. So I feel like we got a lot of bang for our buck. I feel like we got a lot of value out of it. I feel like I owe this to you guys to pay it for, you know, pay back a little bit more, because what we took out of it, I think was tremendous. And, you know, for the time that it took and the value that we got from it, the peace of mind that it gave us as a business, it is a really easy investment to make.
Cool. So I guess, like, with that said, like, I really am I love Bloomerang's mission, right? Like anything that helps charitable organizations, that's amazing. So what's the next big thing for Bloomerang? Anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, so we've got Given Season coming up, and the payments platform, the fundraising platform in really great shape, so much so that we've, for the first time ever, we've moved from, and I think in kind of horizons in terms of technology, right, from doing a lot of H1 stuff, just Horizon 1 really focusing on, you know, building out some of the base functionality. We just released Tap to Pay. So we're using now near field technology to accept payments in person. I think we're maybe the second fundraising application in the space to release it. I think somebody might have beat us by a month, but it's really, you know, out on the forefront of payments technology. We're able to do it because the system is in a great place, and it's going to be a huge value add as everyone's, right, post-COVID world, everyone's getting back to doing in-person events. We thought it was important to, you know, give our customers the technology to be able to accept payments in person.
So that's interesting. So that's like, if I'm at an event, it's almost like a Toast for giving, like that type of thing. Like you could put your phone next to like a iPad or something.
Yes. So it can be phone to phone. We tried to solve this problem with chippers, right? With like a terminal where you could go swipe your card, and having the hardware is just too difficult. You have to manage shipping it, getting it to your customers, getting it set up, getting it integrated with the software. This is just through our mobile app. Someone can just pay you phone to phone now through our mobile app, or tap a credit card if it's got the chip reader to your iPhone or your Android device and accept a payment. So it's huge value add.
Really cool.
Yeah, we're very excited about it. Okay. And it's new. I think you know, we process on Stripe's platform, so they really just released the technology for us to be able to do it this year.
Yeah.
So we jumped on it and we implemented it to make sure that we had it for our customers for the giving season.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Evan. Really appreciated you being here.
Yeah, no problem, Matt.